Well, there is news on the autism front this month. Researchers at Harvard have found that exposure to high levels of air pollution during pregnancy is associated with greater odds that a woman will give birth to a child who develops autism. The researchers could not conclude, however, that air pollution causes autism. It's a disorder for which the cause or causes are still relatively mysterious. One parent who knows that very well is Ron Suskind. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning author who's reported on presidents and published best-selling books. He and his wife, Cornelia, also have a son named Owen who has autism. Ron wrote about his journey in the book Life Animated, A Story of Sidekicks, Heroes, and Autism, which was published earlier this year. In May, I spoke to Ron Suskind and his other son, Walt, to whom Life Animated is dedicated. I asked Ron to tell us about the moment when he and his wife first noticed that something was wrong with Owen.
We had just moved to Washington, D.C. from Boston. I had a job at the Wall Street Journal as a reporter, and Owen just vanished on us. He just stopped talking. He stopped sleeping. He was very unhappy. He was crying a lot. And we weren't sure what we were looking at. He's just shy of three at this point. Walt's five, 2 years older. And we thought maybe it was moving. Some kids don't respond well to a move. But after a few months, he had gone from normal 2.5-year-old speech, a few hundred words, down to a single word, juice, one word. And at that point, we knew something had happened.
Walt, do you remember that at all?
Not the specifics as much, but the general time frame and that, you know, something was up with Owen and something wasn't quite right. You know, as it progressed, and I remember him going in for tests and things like that, Mom and Dad began to, you know, cut me in little by little and kind of try and explain as best you can to a five-year-old that something's not quite right with Owen, and we're trying to find out what it is.
Well, how do you explain that to a five-year-old?
Cornelia and I sort of sat Walt down and said, your brother's a little different. He still is who he was, but this is going to mean that kids look at him, maybe, or, you know, it's going to be a little different for you as his brother. He's not going to want to do things like he did when he was 2.5, because, you know, at that point they used to play and run around and do all the typical things.
And what do you do as a parent? Because there's not a book on this to tell you exactly what you're supposed to do when you find out that your son has autism.
In fact, Cornelia searched for books. You know, it's like, isn't there a sibling book here that really helps us here? There wasn't one. So you just are improvising. And in some ways, you know, this is 1993, 94. Autism is not, you know, on everyone's tongue at that point. And so there's quite a bit of search and find and improvisation that goes on. So you feel your way every day.
And at a certain point, you figure out that there is something about Disney movies that allows you to get through to Owen. Tell us when you figured that out.
Well, Owen loved the Disney animated movies, as any 2.5-year-old did at that point. You know, that was a big era for Disney. Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, all were coming out at that point. Biggest movies of the year of any
great
movie.
Movies, by the way.
And they were. You know, it was a big Disney had a couple tough decades and came roaring back. After the autism's onset, Owen watched these movies with peculiar intensity, it seemed. I mean, he was joyful. His eyes lit up, and he seemed to be calm there in ways he was calm almost nowhere else. After a couple months of that, he's silent at this point. He really can't speak. You hear him murmuring gibberish. He said, juicer vos, you know, and it's baby talk. We're like, at least he's making sounds. That's good. And at one point, we're watching The Little Mermaid, all of us up in the bedroom in Georgetown. And all four of us are together. This is the one thing we can kind of all do as a family at this point. And Owen's rewinding the part where the part where
for the three people who have not seen this movie, yes.
Okay, you know, Ariel's the heroine, remember? Right. And Ariel wants to become human. She has to pay a price for that. Ursula the Sea Witch says, it won't cost much, a trifle really, just your voice. And Owen's rewinding that part. And then we realize, after the third rewind, Cornelia says, it's not juice, it's just. He's saying just your voice. And at that point, we thought it was like a window opened, and in we jumped. Now, ultimately, we go to our therapists and our doctors, and they say this is called echolalia. They mimic things. They don't understand it like a parrot. But we're thinking he may be understanding these scripts. He seems to have memorized these movies as sound alone and is trying to make sense of the words.
And you write in the book, it's almost like there's no autism. He's not playing the roles as well as we are. He's playing them better than we are. Mimicry is one thing. This isn't that.
once we realized he had memorized these movies, you could throw him a line, he'd throw you back the next line. But what came with that line was emotion. He seemed to be emoting it as he should, in the proper emotions, but quite intensely. And that's where we started playing out scenes, all four of us, in the basement. We called them the basement sessions, where we'd play out scenes from Disney. We did that for years.
Let's listen to one of them. This is from the movie Aladdin.
Wait a minute, Jafar, what if you were the chump husband?
What?
Okay, you marry the princess, all right? And you become the sultan.
Oh. Marry the shrew.
I become the sultan?
The idea has merit.
Ron Suskind, when you listen to that, do you remember all of the words to that scene?
Well, you know, you could ask Walter.
Do you remember all the words to that scene?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We're about two beats away from the foul little mind and all that. It's.
Have you both played Iago?
I can't quite channel Gilbert Gottfried as well as Owen and Dad can, so I usually jump in on Jafar.
No, hold on now, Walter. Excuse me.
That's very
good. Yeah, Owen does
it better than all of us, which is the thing.
Definitely. But we all swap around on the different roles depending who's down in the basement.
And Iago is just one of many sidekicks that Owen really got into.
Yeah, Owen becomes, after he gets whacked a few times with schools and things like that, he feels like he's a sidekick himself. The only guy who is designated as a hero is Walter. So Walter would often have to play Simba, Aladdin, the folks who become heroes to Owen's sidekick, Merlin, Rafiki, Jiminy Cricket. And it was a fascinating dynamic.
Walt, as you're figuring this out, what were you thinking? As you're seeing that Disney is the way that certainly your parents are able to communicate with Walt.
Like my parents, it was and, you know, a lot of times still is the best way I can communicate with Owen. And it's still a lot of times is what brings out the glow in him. I mean, a lot more things now, but it has been the one, you know, consistent all through the years. And if that's what's going to draw my brother closer to me and closer to my family and closer to people around him, then you put your head down and you're going full bore.
This is Here and Now, and if you're just joining us, we're listening back to our conversation with Ron Suskind about his book, Life Animated. We also spoke with Ron's son, Walt. Life Animated is about Ron's youngest son, Owen, who has autism. The family discovered that they could reach Owen through Disney films. But as Ron told us, not everyone was happy with the fact that Owen was spending so much time watching movies.
This is a challenge with autism. These are called affinities. Every kid's got one at least. You know, Thomas the Tank Engine, anime, Disney, could be maps, could be train schedules. And they've been the elephant in the room all the way back since the 1930s when autism is first identified. What do you do with them? Do you embrace them? You try to cut them off? Most people through the last 20 years had cut them off, wean the kid off of them. They're obsessive. And after we tried that, we said, you know, we know it works. We're going to embrace it. And the more we did, the deeper Owen led us into this underground cavern. And once we got in there, it was like, my gosh, there's navigation equipment down here. These words actually mean these things. And he's using them. And the scripts is an emotional language. That's what we learned. And he developed essentially his own language using dozens of hours of scripts that he had memorized.
Like what? What were you able to figure out through this?
Well, you know, he would express all sorts of things. I mean, all the way up to he leaves. He's in a college program now. I'll give you an example. Before he leaves for college, he wants to watch a particular scene. And it's where at the end of The Little Mermaid, where Ariel, you know, moves forward in her life. And Sebastian the Crab says, like I always say, Your Majesty, children got to be free to lead their own lives. And Owen plays that part and turns to me and Cornelia and says, are we okay? He's leaving the next morning for college. And we say, we're fine, honey. We'll miss you terribly. But that's the way it should be. And he say, okay, I'm good.
Walt, there's a moment in the book when you have a party at the house and you want to make sure that Owen doesn't tell your parents about this. Tell us what you said to him.
I had kind of plied him with some pizza and pretty much told him, I'm going to have some people over. We're going to be in the basement. Please don't tell Mom and Dad about this.
And you said you're not going to be lying to them. I just don't want you to tell them that there were people here.
Yeah, I didn't want him to tell them a lie. I just wanted him to omit certain facts, maybe. My parents knew people were coming over, and they thought it was my four buddies who usually sat in the basement and played video games with me and not the 70 other people from my school.
But you run Zuskine and figured out a way around this when you sat down with Owen.
I trick him is what I do. And he's really holding his ground, not wanting to break his bond with Walter. I mean, this is really parental idiocy on my part. You know, to have Owen turn state's evidence was just an idiotic move. Here's the one bond the brothers make. Yeah. What Cornelia and I have been hoping for. Instead, I isolate Owen and I say, did Walter have a party? And he's like,
wouldn't say anything.
And then I'm like, were there girls over? Change the subject. And he's like, yes. And I'm like, a lot of girls. And then I do it joyously because he's looking for my face for social cues. And he's like, yes. How many? 41 girls. And, you know, but this is – the book is a lot of search and find by – this is a great search and find moment.
Well, and what did that do to your relationship with Owen, Walt?
It did nothing. I mean, I didn't want him to tell anything, but – if Owen hadn't blown my cover, I think about 14 other clues that they would stumble across over the course of the next day would have. So,
but there were some times when you didn't want to be seen around with Owen all the time.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it was more, elementary school, middle school, and some even in high school where it was tough because it's hard to explain to other 13-year-olds why your little brother's running around talking to himself and, as we called him when he stimmed, we used to call it silly. And it's hard to explain that to other kids your age when you're 8 and all you really want to do is try and, fit in as best you can. And you're trying to swim in the current with everyone else. And there's your brother and, kids are pointing and laughing at him. And there were definitely times when it could get tough and, you just kind of wanted to bury your head in the sand and wish that you could have a quote-unquote normal brother. But I think as I got older and moved into, later on in high school, you realize it's not going to change. It is what it is. And you kind of just build up the courage to bring some friends in and bring some more in and kind of explain this is Owen and this is who he is. And, once people came to understand that and kind of saw it in a closer light when they would come down to the basement and see Owen there watching his movies, it kind of eased it and kind of made me feel more comfortable in my skin, walking around and being able to explain Owen and not kind of fearing what was going to come out of other people's mouths.
Do you see yourself someday becoming Owen's primary caregiver?
Yeah, absolutely. It's something my parents and I have definitely talked about at different points. It's, I think it's something that all autistic siblings have to face at some point, that your parents will do whatever they can, but at the end of the day, it's going to be you and them, and it's your duty as a brother and as a sibling. I wouldn't think of anything else. Of course, I'll be there.
Ron Suskind, what was it like interviewing your son Walt for this book?
That was the toughest interview I did. There were moments where, he's saying stuff to me and really to Cornelia that, a son, even an adult son, might not say to a parent about, how sometimes we missed opportunities. Sometimes we were not seeing things as they were. In some ways, this book is really about everybody. It's about the stories we tell ourselves to make our way in the world. Owen finds these narratives in Disney. All of us find the stories that we embrace here in this book.
How is Owen doing now?
Great.
He's got a girlfriend.
Yeah.
Walt's been his advisor on romantic issues, and so he's very proud of Owen's 2-year relationship.
That's great.
And for Disney source here, I don't know if you know the part from Sword in the Stone when Merlin and Arthur are talking about the power of love. That was definitely a handy one to use to give Owen a blueprint on starting out with a girlfriend. So
and Walter, Walt, of course, has his PhD in Disney at this point. And recently we were talking at a bookstore, and Walt, tell them the thing about the Man Village. That was beautiful.
Oh yeah, sure. Somehow the Jungle Book came up, and the idea of the Jungle Book is all these sidekick characters are helping this boy Mowgli find the Man Village, because that's where he needs to be. And part of, I feel, our family's journey and all these people that are in the book, all these characters that have helped Owen along the way, is we're kind of bringing him along to this man village, and he's come so far. There is a lot more road to go, but he's, you know, every step forward, that's, he's getting closer and closer to, you know, him and all these other kids with autism are getting closer and closer to arriving at this man village and being there and standing next to all of us. Though they've been there all along, but to be recognized for, you know, being there with us.
The book is called Life Animated, A Story of Sidekicks, Heroes, and Autism. It's a great book. Ron Suskind and Walt Suskind, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you.
Our interview from last May. We've got a book excerpt at hereandnow.org.